Hello there. This is CSW, creator of Incarnation Red. If you enjoy Incarnation Red and want to help keep it going, support the show on Patreon via the link listed in the episode notes down below. In return, you'll receive a variety of perks ranging from a monthly Q&A / horror gaming livestream to a chance of having a mini episode made based off of you and your fears released on the main RSS feed for everyone to hear. Additionally, all patrons receive access to an exclusive patron-only Discord server where you can chat with fans and myself, watch live streams of pre-release episode editing, and join in on regular horror movie nights. I rely on your support to keep the show going, so any amount, no matter how small, will help me bring you more scary stories more often. Link is in the episode notes down below. Additionally, if you are a fan of audio drama podcasts in general and want early access releases plus bonus content from Incarnation Red, absolutely sign up for Apollo Plus, a creator-owned platform where every subscriber helps audio fiction creators for just $10 a month. You can think of Apollo Plus almost as the Netflix of audio dramas, offering exclusive content, ad-free and early access releases, behind-the-scenes content, supercuts, and a whole lot more, all by supporting the creators you already know and love. With Apollo Plus, 70% of the revenue goes directly to us creators and provides all of us, both creator and listener, with a place to enjoy the shows we love, such as Afflicted, 13, and of course Incarnation Red, and a whole lot more. And of course, Hemophobia, my upcoming horror podcast, will be there too, so join Apollo Plus through the Apollo Podcasts app or by going to apollopods.com/plus, that's P-L-U-S. Incarnation Red is a horror anthology podcast and thus contains material not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
You don't want to go in there all by yourself, do you?
Episode 28, Phobia.
Senses so acute when your senses are so accurate. This is to be expected.
To resume discussion of case number 1488. Much has been whoever is listening, whatever ear leans to discern my speech on this tape, who are you? Why do you listen? What wisdom, what insight do you gain from these tapes? What does this case file tell you of our reality? I ask this question without rhetorical design because I cannot determine what there is to be gleaned from this. What lesson it has to offer in regards to our reality, if indeed it is ours, and not just mine. Whoever you are, you've heard it, right? You've already heard the thing of which I speak. The distorted tape, the corrupted audio, the static. And coming through that static, the voices. How shall I consider them? In their tones, if you could call them that, I heard many things. Words, cries, laughter, even something like a song. They spoke my name many, many times. And I've stretched the tape one way, then the other. I've consulted audio technicians, played and replayed and replayed, and I'm right. There is simply no other way that the tape could have become so altered to have such a playback. An undoubtedly seldom occurrence in my career has come true once more, that there is no other explanation than that of the supernatural. I am in possession of a real, actual, electronic voice phenomenal artifact. So then, let us apply the method. How do we interpret this voice? For its many tones, I believe it to be just the one voice. The voice of that which lies at the center of case number 1488. I've spoken of it before, and now it has spoken of me. On the corrupted tapes, and in a stranger's suicide note. Almost as if in response. It spoke my name. It replied to some of the claims made on that tape. Even quoted me at myself, in my voice and in its own. And it waited until now. In my initial recordings before the bursting of the paperweight, back when I was still drawing invisible threads from one thing to another with no central point to unite them, there was no such audible reply. Just isolated phenomenon for isolated observations. But at mention of a sentience, the mention of some entity residing between the scattered fireflies and the triggered cameras, now I hear its voice. Speaking back at me. Calling to me in reply to the mention of its existence. And, given the proportional relation between my own conclusions and the assertiveness of its response, one can reasonably conclude from this that I've gotten its attention. It sees me clear, just as I see it. The more I know of it, the more it knows of me. But we know what contact with this thing brings. Without variation, one of two outcomes: disappearance or possession. You become a puppet to commit violent, vicious crimes, or you vanish from the face of the earth. But I'm still here. I haven't been put in prison, nor have I disappeared entirely. So the point proves itself. It's horrible, horrible, yet extraordinary. extraordinarily simple self. It's aware of me, but I'm still here. I have not become the next disappearance case, behind David Hardwick and Lyle Vernon, and neither has it used me to commit the hyperviolence it seems always to crave. The cases of Josiah Laren and of Howard Livingston prove that if it wanted me to commit this violence, it could easily make me do so. So it can then be concluded that I am simply already in the pose it wants me to be in, doing what it wants me to do. I cannot deny that in the distorted static audio preceding this recording that I felt I could hear a tone of glee, of greetings, of rejoicing. All others who have known its influence have either vanished or served its violent end, but me. It wants me to investigate it, to study it, to come to know it. But what then? What follows that? What becomes of me once I know this thing, this abstract and nebulous concept being that seems to exist exclusively in hypothesis and yet continues to exist, insists upon existing, refuses to be buried in empirical soil? What of me then? Incidentally, the fireflies keep coming. They haven't stopped their nightly arrivals. And ever since I listened to the corrupted tape, their gleam, subjective as follows, their individual gleams bear more and more resemblance to a billion eyes looking at me from the dark. When the eyes, the fireflies, they come, I see. I feel it. Subjective. The time has come for me to come clean, in a sense, and speak on the record of a personal matter I have never spoken of in an official case file. Given that I am the client of case number 1488, and all relevant personal matters are disclosed in the case files of the accordant client, I find this appropriate, if difficult. I, Dr. Adam Dwyer, suffer from a phobia. A phobia that, in my line of work, is of crushing, immense weight. I am deeply afraid of the supernatural, on a level that is more biological than anything I have ever felt. I deeply fear the paranormal in all its regards and manifestations, and its existence is the source, truly, of all fear I have ever felt, of all mental turmoil I have ever been subject to. I know not of the source or origin of this phobia. I know only that it is there, and that it stands as the motivation of everything I do. The irony of this reality sits plainly and constantly in my view, and I have been aware of it from the beginning. For someone terrified of the supernatural to devote his life to studying it. And truth be told, I don't understand my simultaneous horror of and fascination with the paranormal any further than the fact of that irony. I would even say it is the only thing that I am incapable of understanding. I have made my peace with that. I have accepted this as truth, but it's when cases like this come to me, cases with actual preternatural verity to them, that the phobia poses a threat to my operative agency. There have been 3 cases of this type before, and although the conclusions of each were gratifying and the findings of each were phenomenally enlightening, it is all work that I did with pain. Pain sitting behind each piece of evidence. Pain moving me in each direction. The same pain I feel now. Only worse than before. Because I have never, never been in this position. The work I do with the paranormal puts me in danger, yes, but it's all on the behalf of others. It has never been me sitting at the mercy of the haunting, subject to its influence primarily and intimately. And thus, comparisons to my previously confirmed cases, cases number 161, 329, and 937, are exercises in futility. Thinking back over them affords me no real insight except a particular memory, a question I... Well, there's really no point in asking it, but... I just wonder what she would do right now. What would she say? She was so brilliant, so gifted with understanding even she could not fully grasp, and never afraid. She was never afraid. But this is not her case, and involving her would just put her in danger. She deserves to be safe after what she endured in her own case. To summarize findings, there is a pan-sentient supernatural phenomenon currently active in the area, exacting influence upon at least a few individuals currently known of, myself included. It is capable of a certain degree of telepathic interference, whether human or insect, of material poltergeistian disturbance, of imitating human speech, of corrupting and/or manipulating technological data, and likely of other things yet unseen. Its range of influence is unknown and thus potentially boundless, and though all confirmed cases of its influence have occurred in the Chicago area, this does not rule out the possibility of its paranormal activity elsewhere. Its influence can be categorically linked to the disappearances of those it has contact with, whether or not the conduit in question is aware of it, or, alternatively, can definitively influence, if not completely control, the actions of any given person with whom it has contact. Though this contact can come unprovoked, it can be empirically inferred that the means by which contact is made is mental, that is, instilled upon the conduit by way of, or, in my case, in response to, internal thought. Its influence can also be linked to certain objects, specifically a paperweight currently in my possession, albeit mostly destroyed, and to certain benign forms of animal life, namely, the firefly. Despite this, research has shown that the sentience takes primary, near exclusive interest in the human, in human interaction, human activity, almost always of the violent sort. And for all the disappearances it causes and the fireflies that it seems to surround those cases with, the most evidence we have is of this entity's interest in taking control of human beings, in making them do things they would not otherwise do. One can tentatively accept the following as its character of sentience. It seeks to operate from inside people. It seeks to exact its will by our hands, with our bodies, our flesh. It manifests in us, in our actions, in our psyches, and ultimately in our execution of violence. For this reason, and on merit of the aforementioned analysis, I use this record to give this pan-sentient paranormal phenomenon a name. For all intents and purposes, and for the remainder of this record, it shall be termed and referred to as the Incarnation. That which embodies in the flesh a deity, spirit, or abstract quality. The Incarnation. Now that we have our terms defined, let us begin the next steps. If indeed it is telepathic interference that is the Incarnation's primary vein of activity, more data is needed on this front. Howard Livingston has provided ample information in interviews, so I turn my attention instead to the other three so-called possession cases. Josiah Laren, Alexander Rose, and Heath Curtis. Reprofile for clarity. Josiah Laren, a young man in his 20s who put in a failed insanity plea for killing two of his own friends with his bare hands, doing so in a forest 2 hours outside of town. Certain claims he made in court made him a possible conduit for influence of the Incarnation. Alexander Rose, a street performer pleading guilty for theft, kidnapping, and murder, the latter having been executed with a single guitar string. Claimed the song had overtaken him, making him bear resemblance to the other such aforementioned cases of the Incarnation's influence. Heath Curtis, a man who, despite an insanity plea, was convicted of stabbing his upstairs neighbors to death because, as he put it, they left the door unlocked. No further specification was given as to what door he was referring to, and Curtis was notably dazed and deluded in court in a manner visually reminiscent of Josiah Laren. Though certainly the most spurious of the four, I still seek to interview him, to interview all three of these individuals in the prisons they now reside in. I need to know what further marks the Incarnation leaves on those it influences. I need to know the conditions of their mental state and that of their actions. I need to know more, just more. If we are to treat this thing as a force that can get inside the head of someone, then we need to take a closer look at the heads of those it has already occupied. To see how they think, what they know, what they have become in the aftermath. Whether or not they saw it coming, or if they had any ability to stop it, to survive it. I will pick back up once the interviews are finished, and more can be conclusively said. Suspend. Well, the interviewing process was, moreover, unfortunately short in results. All three accepted the request for an interview, somewhat miraculously, and I was inclined to treat that fact itself as a potentially notable correlation. But appropriately enough, all three interviews were identical. Questions met by unvarying silence, distractions, and a distant gaze. In my line of work, I know how to recognize a hesitance to speak, demonstrated frequently by those who come to my office, fearful and unconfident. But this was no such reaction. All the three fugitives presented me was the equally recognizable glazed-over eyes of insanity, of pure incoherence. All three of them, without variance, are just too far gone past the point of reality to help me. So again, I face a wall. An impasse. More data is needed in regards to the possession cases, that much is clear. But where to seek it? Well, I suppose I could.
Yeah.
I... Well, it... could prove revealing. If I'm... lucky. Evidence has shown that their influence can... manipulate matter, among... other things. Other unknown things. And for a material variable, a testable material variable that I have at close proximity, I know staggeringly little about them. I've no clue, really, if it would do anything. Because I've no clue what they do in general. And there's only one way to find that out. I, more than anyone, know that the only real way to determine the nature of anything paranormal, if only in partial regard, is to subject it to what tests you can. To all possible tests. And here I'd be testing two things, really. Them and him. It's no different. No different from what I normally do. What I've always done. Investigate. Subject variables to different conditions. See how they interact. That's all I'm doing here. Just with an individual. With a person. But this is hardly unnecessary. This case has taken so many lives, at least 12 to be exact. And unlike any other case of mine, its exigence ranges over more individuals than one. What case is more urgent than this? What scenario will I encounter in my career that has higher stakes, a higher range of lethality, thus requiring actions equally as drastic? I'm doing all I can do. Playing the hand I was dealt. This case has found its center, has centered on something decidedly inhuman. And if I'm to inoculate it, if I'm to understand its nature, then I won't always be able to do the most humane thing, will I? I have to think like it would think. I have to find it by seeking it. Have to come to it. Which just might require doing something like this. Suspend.
flesh. Look at the skin to wither. Look at the eyes to lose their color. Look at the thin red lines atop the ivory sclera to bold search for them till they burst. Look at the hands to flail with electric death. Look at the fingers to grip for a league in its life. Look at the bones to break themselves and to convert the body into a fistful of twigs. Look at the skin to wear away in layers, each drier than the last. Wear no in red, peeling back to the bronze line, the carrion hiding underneath. Look at the volume of the body, the proportions of anatomy and organs sealed behind it. Think of the weight, density of meat, saved to cease, to become an object, to fill the flies. Look at the life behind the face. Look at the light inside the eyes. Then look at the blood. The blood, the blood. The blood, the blood. The blood. And then look into me.
Let me begin with my intentions. 2 days ago, and yesterday, I experienced 3 failed experiments. To remedy this, I sought a different experiment. Sought to convene once more with Howard Livingston at the jail where he awaited trial. This is someone with whom I've had extensive interviews already, but in the interest of testing available variables to yield possible new answers, this interview was to contain a new element. I brought with me a firefly. One of the many, many fireflies that visit my property nightly. Contained in a small jar with oxygen holes. My intent was to converse with Howard. To ask him if he had become aware of anything new. Had any unusual dreams or recollected anything from his killing spree that he had not previously remembered. Following this, the plan was to discreetly unscrew the jar and release the firefly, letting Howard see that I was doing so. My hypothesis was that if I exposed Howard to the influence of the firefly, whatever influence it possessed, then Howard would respond to it in such a way that yielded more answers as to the nature of the incarnation. I approached Howard and did as I planned. He had no new information, no dreams or recollections. I asked him how he was doing. He said he was doing about as well as he could. Without saying anything further, I unscrewed the jar, and the firefly flew out of it, wandered and hovered between our faces. Howard looked at it. Then he looked at me. His pupils magnified by a substantial margin, larger than I believed possible for a human eye. His iris, indeed, had all but vanished. And with eyes Eyes that were a simple black center against a simple white exterior. He spoke. Let me record here what was said verbatim. I didn't write it down, but I did not need to. He said, "With hands of flesh I dig the graves. With eyes of flesh you see me clear. Look deeper, doctor, and you will find the graves of many." I had no words to say, but somehow out of my mouth came a question, automatic, as if by muscular reflex. I said, "And what if I look away? Howard responded, "Then the grave will find you first." Then Howard spoke again. He said, quite simply, "It will be soon, very soon. Good luck." At that point, Howard swung forward in his seat, smashing his face into the glass barrier between us, cracking it and speckling it with blood. He threw his body backwards, arms and legs flailing, hands gripping at nothing. His face turned toward the ceiling while his still blinking eyes rolled back into his head and his mouth gaped and closed repeatedly. I immediately got a guard's attention, alerted them to the situation, and they took a hold of Howard. Blood was leaking out his nose and mouth as they lifted him from the chair. Attempted to bring him out of the room, but it was no use. His body fell from their grip, hitting the floor, motionless. According to the medic, Howard was dead before he even hit the floor. They ruled it as a seizure, cause yet undiscovered. I stayed for a number of hours after that, answering their questions. They knew who I was, as this was not my first meeting with Howard. And like most law enforcement workers who are familiar with me, they were deeply suspicious. Even more so now. And this time, I cannot blame them. After all, I was affirmatively unable to answer their question as to why I brought a firefly into the prison. And I was unable to explain to them the meaning behind Howard's last words, if you could even call them his. And I was responsible for killing Howard Livingston. It was me who chose to bring that firefly in despite the risks. It was me who sacrificed my humanity to understand the incarnation. It was me who carried out the violent end, who caused Howard's death via a rationalized, self-justified act, who committed murder, however involuntary, as the result of my contact with the incarnation. I am not the next disappearance case. I am the next possession case. First the suicide note, now Howard. I feel their eyes on me. I feel the suspicion of the police, first conceived upon the writing of my name on a bloodstained note, now magnified by my presence and behavior before Howard's death. I can tell I am a person of interest to them. I can tell they suspect me in these strange, strange cases. But all I can think of are those words. With hands of flesh I dig the graves. With eyes of flesh you see me clear. Look deeper, doctor, and you will find the graves of many. It's strange, really. I have heard the incarnation's voice in a few different ways. And coming out of Howard's mouth, the mouth of a familiar and human face, I almost feel as if I can begin, just barely begin, to understand its meaning. The graves of many. The grave will find me first. I suppose I can't help but wonder. These graves of which it speaks. Whose graves are they? And how many? With hands of flesh it digs the graves. How many graves is it digging? How many people are about to die? How many people is it going to kill? And when?
Soon, very soon.
And if, as it said, it will be soon, very soon, then what happens next? What happens next? What happens next?
Thank you for listening to Season 2 of Incarnation Red. Incarnation Red will return with Season 3 later this year. As always, if you enjoy the show, please consider supporting the Patreon at patreon.com/CSWHorror. Incarnation Red is created, written, narrated, and edited by CSW. The opening theme was written and performed by Annika Hansen. All music and sound effects used in this podcast are created in-house from scratch. For more information and regular updates, follow me on Twitter at CSW_horror or visit my website CSWHorror.com or like the show's Facebook page, Incarnation Red, as always spelled R-E-A-D. For behind-the-scenes looks and other scary content, you can follow me on TikTok or you can follow me on Instagram at Incarnation Red. Thank you for listening.